Welcome to the Dr. D. Martini Show, where international author, speaker, teacher, and philosopher, Dr. John D. Martini shares with you exactly how to break through whatever is holding you back from your best life. Welcome to today's episode, where Dr. D. Martini is going to be sharing with you the essence of healing philosophy and healing consciousness. If you are interested in exploring the connection between memes, genes, and phenotype, and the power of perception relating to your health and vitality, this is the episode for you. There are many symptoms that your body experiences on a day-to-day basis that can be perceived as disease. What Dr. DeMartini wants to show you today is this is actually your body revealing to you where you may have imbalanced perceptions, and he's also going to be sharing with you a very specific set of action steps and a strategy to help dissolve all those imbalanced perceptions so you can get back to full health and vitality. Enjoy this episode. If you would love to learn more about Dr. DeMartini and his work, head over to drdemartini.com.
So I think the first place to start, John, is to explain the background of how you came to the point in your life where you started to teaching people about the mind-body connection.
Well, first, I had a void in the area of health and well-being. I was living in Hawaii, Oahu, when I was 17. I ended up having strychnine cyanide poisoning and nearly died. And that, of course, created a void because it had damaged my nervous system and muscular system. And that put me on a quest to try to figure out what to do with that. And I then had the opportunity to work and live at a Seekers Horizon health food system, which is before Whole Foods came about. This was like the biggest health food system in America. And they had a giant library where there was nothing but health books. And I just devoured these, trying to learn about things for myself and also because I wanted to be involved in healing arts. And then I went on to professional school, pre-med in college, and studied physiology, anatomy, and things of this nature, and went on to professional school as a chiropractor. And all the way through, as I was reading the textbooks, it would occasionally come across a health condition that said etiology unknown. We don't know the cause. We don't know the reason for it. And those were the ones that fascinated me. The ones that they knew what was causing it, that was interesting. But it was more interesting on the ones, well, what's the cause of that? What's initiating that? And so I had a curiosity and I had a belief that there was a relationship between our mind and body from way back, because I could see various people who had health conditions had certain psychological correlations. And so I was pursuing that. I wanted to understand the psychology, the mind-body. I wanted to know how the brain affected physiology. I studied all the transmitters, all the modulators and hormones and how perceptions affected ratios of them. I remember reading about hormones in the brain and writing dissertations on this. And then when I got into practice in 1982, I started documenting the cases that I had and asking questions that very few people seem to be asking, the correlation between, you know, what was going on in the stresses and the level, what's your perceptions, what's going on. And I started documenting them. I started making notes of them. I started looking at different conditions. I even looked at some genetic conditions that were supposedly congenital anomalies. And I started looking at the embryological development and looking at when those congenital anomalies might have occurred and looking at the development of the fetus. And trying to go back and asking the parents what happened in this week of development. And I found amazing correlations. And I started documenting that. And I printed out an ongoing, as I was gathering data, I printed out an ongoing system many years ago, 35 years ago or so, and started correlating these. And about 30 years ago, I gave a list of it to a number of people in the field, including a lovely woman named Louise Hay. And anyway, I started giving out this information and using it in my clinical practice and training my doctors on it. And now more recently, I've published about 1,000-page textbook on the health conditions and the psychology and physiology and neurology and endocrinology relationship. And I teach a course on that now, a more advanced course, but I teach that course. So I've been fascinated by this 44 years, going on 45 years. I've been doing everything I can to make a connection between them, because I really, truly believe that the power inside us is what heals. You know, we've been living in a era where we want to blame things on the outside. We were in the germ theory. We want to blame germs. We want to blame things on the outside, toxicities and things. And therefore, we want a solution from the outside. But I was a believer that we had the cause and effect was actually inside us. I always said that no therapy is ever complete till cause equals effect in space-time. So I'm more interested in what goes on. I want to give people their power back. I want to help them be accountable. I want them to realize that they have amazing things they can do to change their life. And not that the others don't have a place, except that I just don't think that's the case. When I first started doing it, the germ theory ruled. And today it's dying out. The germ theory is being turned into microbiome ecology and management of microbiomes. And they're now realizing that our immune system is not here to attack bugs, germs, viruses, bacteria, as much as it is to keep them in check, because we depend on those in our physiology. And that's where our psychology is actually governing the immune system to help do that. And that's I want to share that today. That's one of the things I want to share. So I've been this has been a very inspiring topic for me from the time I was 17.
Wow. And that's amazing. And, you know, for myself, you know, when I had the cancer, as I mentioned earlier, you know, and I went to the doctors, and at the age of 21, you hit a sort of a crisis mode where you go, well, how did this happen? What caused this? And basically they said, well, it happens. And I said, well, what do you mean it happens? It happens. And I had to accept that answer for many years. I wonder sometimes how much quicker I would have been able to heal if I had known how, which leads into our next question, how you can make sense of the thoughts and how your thoughts impact your body and ultimately your health or the nature of your diseases.
Well, before I answer that, I want to share something. When I was 24, I became unexpectedly president of the Cancer Prevention Control Association in the city of Houston. I was attending lectures on cancer at this conference, and they somehow wanted me to be involved in it, and I got involved, and they asked me to be president of it, which was a great catalyst for me. It allowed me to speak at a very prestigious conference on oncology. And so I was very, very, very inspired by the idea of seeing the relationship between our psychology and even cancer. And you have two camps. You got some that believe that's possible and others that completely ignore the mind. It had nothing to do with the mind. And I could tell a story, and I may tell a story today about that, there's no doubt in my mind that psychology is playing a role in that. And that's just, you have to be blind to not see it. So, but how it works, let me explain some of this, how I've seen it work. Every individual lives by a set of priorities, a set of values, things that are most important to least important in their life. And whatever's highest on our value, we are spontaneously inspired to live and fulfill. Whatever's low on our values, we need motivation on the outside to get us to do it. We need punishment if we don't do it and reward if we do it to get us to do the lower priorities. But the things that are most important, we're spontaneously inspired from within. We just love doing it. Whenever things challenge our values, the highest values, we activate an area of the brain and the nervous system that's called the sympathetic nervous system. And when something supports our values and our perceptions, because it's about perception, we activate the parasympathetic nervous system. These are the two divisions that are complementary opposite aspects of the nervous system that runs physiology and runs cell behavior. And so we literally, because of our values, we're filtering our reality and we're experiencing our reality accordingly. So if we perceive, and I'm going to keep emphasizing, it's all about perception, because an event, we've all had events in our life that we thought were challenging. And then weeks or days later, we found out, oh, thank God that occurred. That's a blessing. And we didn't see it initially. And we realized that we thought it was challenging. It turned out to be a blessing. Or things we thought were really great, and we turned out to be, oh my God, I didn't see the downside of that. You know, when we're infatuated with somebody, we don't see the downsides. When we're resentful of things, we don't see the upsides. And it's our illusion, actually, because everything's got both sides. So whenever we see one side without the other, and we see challenge, we activate the sympathetic. We see support, we activate the parasympathetic. One is fight or flight responses, and the other one is rest and digest responses. And so what happens is this autonomic nervous system, the sympathetic and parasympathetic, these two systems run our physiology, run our cells. Every cell, even immune circulating cells, have receptors on them. And those receptors, which are made out of proteins and sugars, what they call glycoproteins, they are organized in very specific manners, and they basically react to the transmitters, modulators, regulators, and hormones that are circulating through our blood and our extracellular fluid and our lymph and our cerebrospinal fluid. And basically, it's those hormones are the ratios of those hormones are changing according to perceptions. So let me give an example. If you're infatuated with somebody, your dopamine level goes up, your oxytocin level goes up. Dopamine because you're kind of addicted to it. Oxytocin because you want to bond with it, trust it. Vasopressin because you want to bond with it. Enkephalins, endorphins because it's pleasurable. Estrogen because it nurtures you. And serotonin because you start building a fantasy around it. So those particular transmitters and hormones go up the moment we perceive something that supports our values if we're infatuated. On the other hand, when we get resentful to something or something really challenges us, we get testosterone, we get histamine, we get cortisol, we get norepinephrine, epinephrine. We get a different set of substance P, polypeptide. And these are all kind of avoidance responses. So we have in ourselves a change in our chemistry and neurochemistry according to our perceptions. And I'm amazed. Pardon me for making a challenge this, but I see people being sold the idea that you have a biochemical imbalance and you need a pharmaceutical to solve that. And I really, really challenge that model because I think that that's incomplete. If all of a sudden you're sitting in a room just minding your business and a tiger jumped in, was about to eat you, if we did a neurochemistry and blood chemistry on you, we would have all those chemical compounds that are challenging you, norepinephrine, testosterone, all be skyrocketing in a billionth of a second. And if all of a sudden it turned out that tiger that was jumping on you was Tony Tiger and it hugged you and you always wanted to meet Tony Tiger and he was your friend, the opposite hormones would change in a second. So what happens is our transmitters and hormones are changing because of our perceptions. And we sometimes have, and I'm sure everybody's had a situation where you've had emotions about something, you've been reactive to something and either infatuated or resentful, your hormones are being thrown into one side, polarized. And then you have something else occur and you have to just kind of stop what you're thinking and feeling and go off to the next thing. Well, a lot of times those perceptions are still active, even though they're subconscious and they're still running physiology and chemistry and neurochemistry. And so what happens is if we just use the idea, we have an imbalanced chemistry and you need to change it with a drug, we're missing out on the power of our own perceptions and being able to take command of transforming our perceptions and transforming our physiology. And so I'm very strong on that because I've seen too many hundreds of people with conditions that have been said that they need some sort of a pharmaceutical to solve it. And there may be cases like that, but they're rare compared to the amount that the person has the capacity to change their perceptions and change their chemistry. And I see every weekend in the Breakthrough Experience, you know, I do the Breakthrough Experience every weekend. I see it every single weekend. People that have these labeled conditions, told their biochemical imbalance, put on some sort of medication, robbed of any accountability of any perceptions. We go in there and transform their perceptions, their chemistry changes, and all of a sudden they go back and they said, well, somehow it's not needed. The chemistry's not needed anymore. I said, because they have the power inside, and that's, I want to focus on that. I want to help people get that back because I think that that's, they're robbing them of their power and they're robbing their accountability and they're robbing themselves of the innate knowledge that they have available to them. And the studying this is very fascinating. And I think everybody can benefit on. We're so used to a hedonistic model in the health fields that we're trying to get rid of all the pains and try to give just nothing but pleasure that we're not realizing that pain and pleasure are part of the mechanisms of healing. And I'll come back to that as we go along here. But so what happens is we have these perceptions. They affect and change the neurotransmitters, regulators, modulators, hormones. They go through the fluid systems. They go to the cell receptors. When they get to the cell receptors, they change the conformation and arrangement of the receptors. That opens little gates in the cell walls, triggers a secondary reactions called second messenger reactions, because the primary message is the transmitter. The secondary message is this one at the cell wall. That creates a change in calcium and ions in the cell wall. Certain hormones or certain electrolytes can go into the cell. That creates a series of cascading enzymes, phosphatase if it's parasympathetic and kinase if it's sympathetic. That then goes into the nucleus, goes through the nuclear pore into the nucleus, and either turns on or turns off various portions of DNA. It loosens up the histones wrapping around the DNA. If it wants to cause a cell to undergo mitosis or transcription to make proteins, or it turns it off. And it's regulating that. So as Bruce Lipton has wisely stated, and I've worked with Bruce before, that the cell wall is actually governing a lot of nuclear function and a lot of the genetics. The epigenetics, as we call it, is affecting genetics. The methylation, which comes from the sympathetic, and the acetylation, which comes from the parasympathetic, are regulating DNA expression. And so we sometimes have once thought that these are genetic diseases, but now we're looking at the psychology affecting and turning on and turning off the genes. And maybe some of these genetic conditions are also epigenetic in origin. Epigenetic means things that are beyond the genes, upon the genes, things that act upon the genes. In fact, if you look at a cell if you take a sperm and an egg and unite them together and make a zygote, which is the first cell that makes up the body development, every time it divides, it supposedly has the same genes, but there's little signal molecules between the cells as they start to differentiate and start to form that change the cell's shapes and functions, etc., until we have hundreds of different types of cells, bone cells, skin cells, etc., even though we have the same genes. So it can't be just genes alone that's causing illnesses. It has to be epigenetic. And that epigenetic is governed by our perceptions. That has a lot to do with our perceptions and normal embryological development and the toolkit. So I'm a firm believer is if we go in there and find out what the ratios of those perceptions are in the history, a lot of conditions can change. I'm convinced now that our cells are creating symptoms to guide us back to a balanced perspective. If we see more support than challenge, the parasympathetic comes on and we create parasympathetic symptoms, which is, and for instance, in the cell level, this is what's cool. At the very cell level, you have the nucleus and you have the plasma membrane around it, the cell membrane around it. Whenever you get something that supports your values, then what happens is there are little molecules that transport information and things from the cell wall into the nucleus. So the nucleus can now have the materials ready for dividing into growing. But if we get sympathetic activity, there's another transmitter, another transporter that basically takes information from the nucleus out to the cell wall to defend. Just like we are, if all of a sudden we're a little community and we got a wall around the community and people are attacking the wall, we all go to the wall to protect ourselves. And when we're relaxing and nobody's attacking us, we go inside and we feast and we make love and we procreate. That same dynamic's going on in the cell. And there's different transmitter molecules that are actually that are responding according to whether we perceive stress and challenge or support. So what's going on? The cell is actually responding and creating symptoms and certain indicators inside the cell that are building and destroying molecules in the cell that we call disease. We label it. We look under a microscope. We look at the cell and we say, okay, well, that's that condition. We look at the tissue. We look at the organs. At different levels of the dynamic, we see different symptoms. And we label it that disease. But we don't ever go and ask the question, what's going on in the psychology and the perceptions at that moment? That's where I come in. And that's where I've been doing that for all these years. And there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that there's psychology underlying these conditions. And it's just insane not to see this. And the reason why a lot of people haven't addressed this is because of the model in healthcare. The model is based on the assumption we're supposed to feel good all the time. Now, let me just blow that out for a second. If all of a sudden you go out and you eat a pizza and you eat a steak and you eat a cheesecake and you eat a bunch of strawberries and then you eat a bunch of peanut butter and you just overeat and pig out and you wake up the next morning with a, you know, congested nose, swelling, oily face, headache, nausea, cramps, bloat, flatulence, etc. And you're just really feeling blah. And you go to a health professional in medicine or something, and they give you a symptom for antihistamine for the nasal congestion, anti-headache medicine, analgesic, anti-flatulent, anti-cramps, antibiotics. And they give you all these things, and they say, well, you've got these conditions. And then if you go to a naturopath or a chiropractor, they look at it differently. They say, well, it looks to me from your history that you pigged out last night, your body's doing what it's designed to do. It's designed to create those symptoms as a feedback to let you know not to pig out, you fool. You're exaggerating what you think you can handle in your food and you're not realizing that your body is giving you symptoms. So are the symptoms health or disease? This is a really interesting question. And I'm convinced that the symptoms we have are our friends as much as our so-called enemies, based on the perspective. And I believe that if we learn how to use applied physiology to know what those symptoms are representing, they can give us guidelines into what we're doing psychologically and why we're leading ourselves to those outcomes. And that's the thing that I agree with the idea of applied physiology. I'm very much a promoter of that, instead of the idea that it's symptoms, get rid of them. Because suppressing the symptoms and never getting the message of what it's being there, to me, is a disservice to the human population. That whole construct, I think, is disservice. It robs people of accountability. It gives them a false hope of something on the outside. It gives them sometimes a pharmaceutical which has side effects. And it basically is blaming the viruses and the bacteria in some cases. And the reality is those are commensal symbiotic organisms that are trying to keep us in balance. Wildlife management of the ecosystem, a microbiome, is more important today than it was 30 years ago. And so that whole model in healthcare is having to change. And so I guess I've been a pioneer in that area. I've been wanting to get that message out. One of the reasons I became a chiropractor and not into healthcare in another field, because I believe that the power that made the body is what heals the body. And we have the capacity inside us to do transformational healing by changing our perceptions, changing our nutrition, changing our actions, and living a wise lifestyle. And I think our body's creating symptoms to guide us to do that. So I'm just starting.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. It's a topic that I'm very passionate about too. You know, having gone through what I went through in my own personal journey, that I can 100% attest to the perception of what I went through. And after having shifting that perception, I realized the blessings in it, you know, rekindling a relationship with my parents, finding my journey as an entrepreneur, seeing through the flaws in the medical health scheme, which I'm quite passionate about now. And I can totally understand how people get sucked into that cycle of running to the healthcare professionals to try and alleviate the symptoms and then being disappointed and then just getting stuck in that cycle, which leads to sort of the next question. Is there a correlation between the types of thoughts we have and the types of illnesses or diseases we get and how we hold on to them? So the emotions that we run and the types of diseases that they manifest, in other words.
Yeah, when I was in clinical practice as an intern at chiropractic college, I noticed a pattern, something that came in that was a frequent pattern. There was quite a number of young women, I say young now, I'm in my 60s, so they were probably in their 30s, sometimes 40, but 30s typically. And they were usually having one, two, or three children by then. And they were having hypothyroidism. And I saw this pattern, and the thyroid gland originates from the tongue. Immunologically, the tongue has what is called a thyroglossal duct. It from the bottom of the tongue, it grows down and creates a thyroid down here in the neck area. And it divides into two lobes, but it originates from underneath the tongue. And the tongue is involved in speech and swallowing and food. And the thyroid is involved in metabolism, speeding up metabolism if it's high, or low thyroid is low metabolism. And when you have low thyroid, you have slow, slurred speech and slow metabolism. And you end up looking like a bowling pin. You grow wide in the hips and narrow at the top. But if you have very high thyroid, the opposite occurs. You narrow down and you end up with fast speech and hyperactive. And I found out that the people with the hypothyroidism, very consistently, they were holding in what they wanted to say. And I found out that every time you are wanting to say something but holding it in, it lowers the thyroid. It's a withdrawal. It's a hesitancy. And you're slow at speaking up. And if on the other side, when you're speaking out, you end up raising the thyroid. And I thought that's interesting. So I realized that when we have our set of values, when we feel our values are supported and we're really supported, we tend to minimize ourselves. When we tend to get our values challenged, we tend to exaggerate ourselves. If somebody challenges, we get defensive. We get righteous. We speak up. We talk them down. But if somebody's really saying and supporting us, we become more dependent. We more withdrawn. And we found out that these girls were having situations where they were now having children. They were having to focus on the children. They were stopping their careers, stopping their work, and their husbands were taking care of them. The husbands are now having to work more because they have the second, third child, and they're not seeing the husbands, and they're having more and more work to be done at home, and they're not delegating wisely, and they're feeling trapped having to do stuff that's not inspiring to them. They're losing their careers and what they also would love to do besides the children, particularly ones that wanted careers. And there's this conflict, but they couldn't speak up because they depended on the husband. And they would do is they would withdraw, and they would unconsciously affect their estrogen levels, which is they're not feeling nurtured, and they would end up getting their thyroid down, and then they would end up having a situation where they would protect themselves from getting pregnant again because they didn't want to be trapped further, and they were also not speaking up, and they were creating hypothyroid conditions. And I saw this pattern over and over again. And so without a doubt, our perceptions and how we see life and our willingness to express or not express can affect glandular function. I found out that if a person is really self-righteous and feels defensive, in order to defend itself, it gets taller and its growth hormone goes up. And if something supports and you become dependent, juvenilely dependent, your growth hormone goes down. So the sympathetic activates the growth hormone and the parasympathetic side cuts it down again. And so I looked at all the different hormones and I found the autonomic relationships to our from our perceptions to all the hormones. And there's no doubt there's a correlation. Our estrogen, if we're nurtured, our estrogen goes up. If we're not nurtured, estrogen goes down. We've seen people that felt challenged and they become feminized men or masculinized women because of that. And we know that our perceptions can affect those hormones. So various conditions, glandular conditions and hormonal conditions definitely are affected by our perceptions of whether we're over-supported or over-challenged in our life. And now, in actuality, in the breakthrough experience, I've demonstrated to thousands of people that even though we have a thing, every time we judge something, we divide things up into the conscious and unconscious. If we're infatuated with something, we're aware consciously of the upsides, but we're blind to the downsides. If we're resentful to something, we're aware of the downsides, we're blind to the upsides. And so every time we judge and we get to either more sympathetic or more parasympathetic in our perceptions, we literally divide ourselves up into the unconscious and conscious. And in the breakthrough experience, I have people identify with questions, how to bring the unconscious conscious and rebalance the perceptions to show that with every support was a challenge and every challenge had a support. Once they see that, their physiology normalizes again. And the symptoms that were being created, we're trying to get them back to see that balance. And what's interesting, when we live by our highest values, we have the highest probability of seeing a balanced orientation, more objectivity and more equanimity. And we're living by our lower values and we're not being true to ourselves. We have more polarized perception. We tend to judge more subjectively and we tend to have this symptomatology try to let us know that. So our symptoms are actually trying to get us back to live by our highest values, which is our purpose and the most meaningful thing we can do in life. So I'm convinced that the body is actually creating symptoms to try to guide us back to authenticity, meaningfulness, and inspiration. And I know that Aristotle, back in his times, came to a similar conclusion, and I don't think it's changed. I think that's he was spot on at the time.
Thank you, John. And you know, now that we understand how emotions can impact our health, you know, now you trace it back. You say our emotions impact our health, and our health impacts these symptoms. And these symptoms we address now and currently medically, but without looking at the emotions. But now that you've shared this with us, what can we do to address these concerns with the emotions, and how can we go about changing that for ourselves?
Well, the quality of our life is based on the quality of the questions we ask. And the questions that bring us the awareness, the conscious awareness of our unconscious to allow us to balance that equation is one of the most powerful healing systems I know. I've said in my book, Count Your Blessings, that I wrote many, many years ago, that love and gratitude are still the greatest healers on the planet. There's more transformative physiology changes, more spontaneous healing, spontaneous remissions of conditions when people all of a sudden transcend their judgments and get back into gratitude and love than anything I know. And I studied healing with healing specialists in different fields in my 20s, particularly, and traveled quite a bit and studied some of the great healers from all the way from the leading cardiovascular surgeons all the way to the spiritual healers to chiropractors, naturopaths, herbalists, every form of healing I could find, I was starting to look at what was common to the people who had the greatest results. And I found four cardinal pillars: gratitude and love of the heart, and certainty and presence of the mind, which goes with gratitude and love of the heart. Those four cardinal pillars were found common to those that are greatest healers and the people that actually heal. And as long as there's uncertainty and confusion and wavering and an emotional disturbance and everything else, we're going to have illness. But as long as when we bring ourselves from poison to poise and from imbalance to balance in our perceptions, we have amazing healing capacities. And so I'm fascinated by that. I didn't mention a minute ago, but when a person has their values challenged and they feel bitter towards somebody, the blood sugar goes up as a mechanism, and oxygen goes up to ready to fight or flight. So glucose levels go up in diabetes when we have this unconscious bitterness going on. And hypoglycemia is just the opposite. When we're minimizing ourselves and sacrificing ourselves for others, like a martyr or something like that, the blood sugar goes down because we feel like we owe it to people. And we've seen this in diabetics. It's very difficult to tell a diabetic what to do, but it's easier to tell a hypoglycemic what to do. So we can see these patterns. And so what I do in the breakthrough experience or one-on-ones with people when I consult with them, because in a lot of health conditions, I do more one-on-ones. I need to get really specific on what's going on, what their history is, et cetera. Although many of the people who in the breakthrough experience, we've had one doctor send 375 patients from his clinic to there. A psychiatric hospital sent over 400 patients to the breakthrough experience because they've seen the results there, and they say, go there. We have a new organization right now sending there from the health fields. Because because what we're doing in the breakthrough experience is we're balancing out the perceptions, which balances out the emotions, which balances out chemistry, neurochemistries, and physical chemistries. And then the body does its job. We're the one disturbing the body. And so the solution is to ask the questions, to reveal to the conscious mind the unconscious content that's imbalanced and liberate it through balance. Anything you're infatuated with occupies space and time in your mind and runs you, and it's noise in the brain. And anytime you're resentful to something, it occupies space and time in your mind and runs you, and it's noise in the brain. And we have, that's called memory and anti-memories now in the new technology and new neurology. So anytime you have those imbalanced, you create chemistries that are imbalanced and you create symptoms. And so I just balance them. And I go back all the way back to Galen in the first century, Aristotle in his times, 400 AD, fourth century AD, he was trying to say that it's a balancing act. And even though we've evolved and we got way more knowledge today, it still boils down to the same basics. It hasn't changed. Empedocles said the same thing in his time. He said there was love and strife. And when we have an integration inside ourselves between conscious and unconscious, you might say, we have healing and wellness. And when we don't, when everything's out of balance and strife inside our physiology, strife is the splitting of the conscious and unconscious, as Jung would describe, we have illness. And illness, I don't think illness is something to be, I think it's something to be grateful for in some respects. And part of the healing process that I do in the breakthrough experience, when people have an illness, I ask them, so what are the benefits of getting out of it? And they go, what? There's no benefits of this. I go, what's the benefit you're getting out of it? And they find that it's making me decide what I really want to do in my career, the relationship. It's making me humble myself in the relationship. It's making me start to communicate. It's making me change and get on with the things that I've not been doing. There's benefits sitting in there, and it's actually a strategy. I'm really at the point where I think that the illnesses are strategic mechanisms by the unconscious motives to try to get us back into balance so we can live authentic and integral lives. So in the breakthrough experience, I basically help with the proper questions to show people how to do it. And you got those questions, it changes your life. You have those the rest of your life learning those. Very important to get those questions.
Yeah, and I would encourage you, just to remind the audience, we will be making an offer for the breakthrough experience at the end. And I love, John, that you said the love and gratitude are the greatest healer on the planet. And, the certainty and presence of mind, I think, is so critical. I love the way that you said that. What would you say the role of nutrition plays on health, and what is the impact? We've discussed the emotion. The nutrition is obviously something that's most common out there that people focus on. What would you say is the role of nutrition on health?
Well, it's your cells can't function. The cells have chemistry that is oxidizing and reducing and keeping things in balance. And it needs cofactors, minerals and vitamins and enzymes to catalyze these reactions to maintain metabolism and metabolic equilibrium. And so without nutrients, we don't function. We have to have the basic macronutrients, the carbohydrates, proteins, fatty acids, etc. But we also need the micronutrients, the minerals. I just researched yesterday on, I wrote a 2-volume set on the origin of life that I give a class. It's a 5-day class on how life possibly originated in the universe and particularly on planet Earth. And the earliest rendition of the idea for at least a geobiosis mechanism, where basically if we believe that life came from the Earth itself, there's others that believe it rained upon the Earth like a pan-sperm theory that Arrhenius described as Nobel Prize winner, that it's already out there in the universe. And there's no doubt in my mind they're going to find bacteria at least in the next 5 to 10 years that are in other on planets and on possibly in other solar systems, but definitely inside our solar system, we're definitely going to find on our moons and planets, there's going to be bacteria, extremophile bacteria. And what we needed nutrients for to kickstart the system, particularly pyrite and sulfur and certain minerals, zinc and copper and these minerals. So we need minerals. We need quality foods that have minerals in them. And if we don't eat them, our enzymes are going to take their toll. We also need vitamins. They're cofactors that we have to have them. We're not like some species that can manufacture all of them. We have some that we're not, they're vital vitamins that are essential that we can't get without. And so a lot of the foods today are missing those nutrients and they need to be in place. And, but what's interesting is even though you can eat quality foods and you can have the proper nutrition supplementation, which I incorporate, if you are highly stressed, or highly polarized in your perceptions, highly sympathetic or parasympathetic, that affects not only the microbacteria sitting in the microbiome inside the intestines and the digestive system, the mouth, it changes the chemistry, it changes their habitats, it changes their microbiomes, and they're involved in the breaking down of nutrients and the absorption of nutrients. And so, and also our cell walls get tighter or looser according to our emotions. So we can have a leaky gut or a tight gut syndrome that basically is affecting our absorption of nutrients. So in addition to making sure we're eating quality nutrients, which is essential, that's actually common sense. At the same time, our psychology is affecting what we absorb, where it goes in the body, and how it's utilized, and whether or not we have the right microbiome to be able to help take those nutrients in. So you can eat the nutrients, but a lot of nutrients go passing right through us. I did a survey and a study many, many years ago when I was an undergraduate, where I went down to the sewage treatment plant and I found out that they had to have bulldozers down there to remove all the tablets that went through people that was never absorbed that were supplements. And it was constantly coming down through the pipes and going down the sewage treatment plant. They had to remove those because it was blocking sewage recycling. So a lot of nutrients are not even being absorbed. They're passing right through the gut and through the body. Because one, they're not proper nutrients. They're not they're falsely advertised as something that would be absorbed, but they're not really absorbed well, or they're not properly absorbed because our psychology is so stressed, and our stress system shuts down the digestive system and gets us for defense and shuts down our digestive system. When we perceive more challenge and support, our digestive system shuts down. That's why if we get stressed while we eat, we don't feel well. We don't digest well. If we relax and we meditate, we do gratitude exercise before we eat. Grace, it increases the probability of absorbing and assimilating and helping our nutrients, et cetera. And our bacteria, the microbiome that sits inside our intestines particularly, but in all parts of our body, they're moving around and they're literally changing according to emotions and changing according to nutrients. If we eat a lot of fatty foods, a different type of bacteria start growing. If we eat a lot of fruits and vegetables, another type of bacteria start growing. And they're constantly having to do it. And we know that certain illnesses are correlated with those bacteria. And those bacteria are correlated with what we eat and what our psychology is. And so now they've got the microbiome is now being studied and they're almost correlating with it. The different types of illnesses are all being correlated with the different types of bacteria and viruses there. So instead of taking an antibiotic and getting rid of it, I haven't had an antibiotic in 45 years or any form of medication whatsoever. But if you, instead of taking that and getting rid of all the bacteria, which is foolish, we now are trying to use different types of foods to re-regulate the bacteria and cure our own condition and change our psychology, which regulates that. That's much smarter in the long run. And it's managing our wildlife ecosystem inside us. And instead of sitting there and just killing it and then hoping it will balance itself. So, yeah, I don't know. I forgot the question, but I just went off.
Doesn't matter. It really is a holistic look at it. You know, I think You have to look, you know, I'm fascinated by the perception again. I bring it back to that because in some individuals, the stress can actually activate them so they can climb mountains and race around tracks at in crazy speeds and have split second reactions, where other people, that same stress will cause them to shut down and sort of go in and completely collapse. So, you know, we said, we touched on the nutrition and natural medicine. And I think Plato actually said that let food be thy medicine. Is there still a place for conventional medicine in this conversation?
Absolutely. There, you know, I was sitting in, I was sitting on my surfboard. I took off on a wave and dropped into a beautiful wave in Cardiff, California, a number of years ago. This is quite a ways back. But I went there and I got in a beautiful little tube and I was riding this tube. And then all of a sudden at the end, it got too tight and it flipped me. When it did, it sliced off this ear, believe it or not, luckily. And I found it floating in the water, luckily. And I wouldn't have my ear today. But I grabbed it. I walked into the beach. My kids are playing in the sand there. And we quickly ran over to a surgeon at an emergency ward to sew my ear back on. And I didn't go, okay, I need to take some nutrients or I need to sit and meditate at that moment. So in that emergency situation, I'm very grateful for emergency team and a neurosurgeon team to be able to do their job, their specialty. And there's definitely times when you have acute situations that you require medical care. I'm not negating medicine for acute situations. It's many of the chronic conditions that I think that are, and many of these conditions that we deal with that are common to everyday conditions that I question that's the smartest approach. A lot of the overuse of antibiotics for these years and the poor, inadequate, proper use of them have led to now superbugs, which means we have to come up with alternative ways of dealing with these reactions. But our immune system is, if we're under stress, our immune system shuts down. And when it shuts down, our bacteria change ratios. There's a thing called eustress and distress. Eustress is healthy and brings wellness, and distress is illness oriented. So whenever we are pursuing challenges that inspire us, doing something we really love doing that we want to do and tackle a challenge, like a young boy doing his video game that he loves, and he's challenged by it, but he wants to tackle it. That actually helps the immune system and helps us have resiliency and adaptability. But when we're doing something we're not inspired to do, and we feel we're trying to escape it, and we keep having to deal with it, that's distress. And distress is unquestionably causing illness. And that is because the sympathetic is dominating and the cortisol levels keep going up and shuts down the immune system and causes all the digestive systems and endocrine systems to be affected. And all of our resources, instead of going to genetic mutation, mitosis, it goes out to the cell wall in defense. It's constantly living under defense. And that's not a very healthy state. It means you're eating a quick, it's like going and getting a quick candy bar because you don't have time to eat. That's the same kind of stress levels. And now with all the ridiculous amounts of sugar that's out there, which is, it's insane what people eat. I've never added sugar or salt or any things like that into my diet for 45 years. I was in a movie called Overfed and Undernourished. And it's, if you haven't seen that movie, I think everybody in the world would benefit from that movie. That it's a wake-up call about how we eat. And I think that's essential. But there is an essential component of eustress, but not distress. And so I think if people fill their day with high-priority actions, inspire them, and pursue challenges that are meaningful, that are purposeful to their lives, it actually promotes wellness and longevity. And it adds telomeres to the ends of the genes, and it gives you a longer lifespan, more mitotic divisions available. The Hayflick limit is transcended. But if all of a sudden you're in distress, the telomerase and everything else goes down and everything else, and we don't get any more telomeres, and we start aging. We start to having the opposite effect. So we literally can redo our body. It's amazing. It has the capacity to regenerate and redo things really beautifully if we're not interfering with it. That's why I became a chiropractor, because of the philosophy. I really believe that that we had more power inside us than what we've been given credit. And we haven't been honoring that. And now with the advancements of epigenetics and applied physiology and what we're learning, it is now pointing to that. That's the secret of it. And but most people don't undertake the time. They don't have a value on their wellness. And so they don't take the time for it. And they don't know the power of it. And they just quickly go for an ill for every pill. a pill for every ailment. And I think that I always say...
Listen up. Imagine knowing with absolute certainty that your life is working for you, that you're on track and that you're making progress towards the goals and dreams that you desire every day. If you've been an avid listener to this podcast, you'll have heard Dr. DeMartini mention his signature program, The Breakthrough Experience. It's a two-day weekend seminar where he shows you how to take everything that you've been learning on this podcast and put it into practice so that you can gain the shifts that you most desire for your life. If you would love to transform your life, and if you've been a little bit uncertain where to start or how to get there, then join Dr. John DeMartini at The Breakthrough Experience so he can show you how. What you'll learn in these 2 days is truly life-transforming. It's time to put the power in your hands to create your magnificent life. To find out more, go to demartini.fm/seminar. You can also access the link in the show notes below. We look forward to seeing you there. And now, let's continue with this episode.
I said on The Secret, when incurable means curable from within.
That's a brilliant way to end it. And I think, you know, we've conditioned ourselves into this fast food, fast fix type of mindset. And it's no wonder that people get trapped in that space. So when people are trapped in that space, as I just mentioned, is there something that we can do to help those people that we care about, the emotions that are impacting their lives? For example, our children, our wife, our husband. What are the common correlations between the emotions, for example, and childhood issues?
Well, every human being has, as I said earlier, a set of values. And anytime we communicate with them, if we project self-righteousness, our values onto them and try to fix them and get them to change, et cetera, they're going to resist, retaliate, and defend and hold on stronger to their own value system. But if we ask questions to them, find out what their needs are, their values, what's important to them, and communicate and expand their repertoire by communicating how these new ideas that might help them could expand and help them fulfill what's meaningful to them, they become receptive to new ideas. And a lot of children, because of the way we grew up, in the 1950s, it was taught that children who were blank slates and they need to be taught what their values are, they need to be socialized, and they need to fit into the herd and be sheep instead of shepherds. And it's the children that actually stand up that are different, that actually are the leaders of the future, the entrepreneurs. The misfits, as Steve Jobs likes to say. And so we have to find a balance between supporting and challenging our children, because that love is a balance of support and challenge. If you imagine if you had a relationship with somebody and all they did is said, I just want to do whatever you want to do whenever you want me to do it. Just tell me what to do. And they just supported you all the time. You'd say, go get a life. And they'd be a doormat. You wouldn't respect them and it'd be boring. But if they challenged you and pushed you and told you you had to do something like that, you'd get burned out. And neither of those extremes create love. Love is always a balance of support and challenge. It's a synthesis and synchronicity of all company opposites. So what I do, and I mentioned the breakthrough experience, but the breakthrough experience, I teach people how to ask questions that bring balance to perceptions, how to prioritize our lives in such a way that we're living by the highest priority, where we have the most objectivity, which spontaneously brings balance to our physiology and psychology. And there's things a person could do by the questions they ask and learn. That's what the DeMartini method is, the method I've developed on how to balance out pretty well every one of the psychological imbalanced perceptions that I've seen in all the health conditions and all the stresses that people face. I've looked for questions on how to rebalance them all. And I assure you, there's a certain set of questions that can pretty well knock out pretty well everything that you're going to face. And if you know those questions and you ask those questions, liberate yourself by them, you can take command of your life. And that, to me, that's what I'm – there's nothing more inspiring to me than hearing about people that took command of their life, changed their life, and went off and did what their mission was and did something amazing with their life and brought healing. I mean, we've had people in the breakthrough experience, for instance, on almost every possible friggin' condition. And I tell them, I'm not here to cure any condition. I don't like to label conditions because I believe it's all physiological. It's all doing its job to try to get you authentic. If we help you get authentic, we help you get inspired, we help you get back into balance, we help you prioritize your life, we help you delegate lower priority things so you're not bogged down with things that aren't inspiring, and help you get into your executive center, the one that brings governance to physiology and not the amygdala, which is trying to escape, your physiology does amazing things and it has the power to heal. And I think that that's being minimized in some health professionals, and I'm going to speak up about it. So,
yeah. I think we all should, because you know we need to take ownership of our own emotions and take responsibility. I feel for the way we feel, and also the people around us. John, just quickly before I go into making the offer for the audience, can we look at a couple of the issues that people have asked us to clarify on? Correlate them briefly. We've got diabetes, eczema, stuttering, colds and flus, fertility issues, acne. Can we look at some of those common issues and see what thoughts correlate to those conditions?
Go through the list one at a time. What's the first one?
Perfect. Diabetes.
Well, I mentioned that earlier. I found when I worked with diabetics, because I had a lot of diabetics patients over the years, and in seminars, I mean, they're pretty common. And there's no doubt in my mind that if anybody who has a family member who's a diabetic will know what I'm about to say, they are, they like to make decisions on their own. They like to be the ruler, you might say. And they may not even be conscious of it, although many are, but there's an unconscious or conscious bitterness and frustration, and they're constantly under a sympathetic drive that's sitting there. Now, let me explain something here. Let's say that you and your wife or husband is sitting there on a Sunday, relaxed, casual, sitting there, and then all of a sudden you get into a little bit of a quarrel and you get into a fight, and you're yelling and screaming at each other, and you're kind of having a go at each other. And then all of a sudden the doorbell rings unexpectedly, and you stop the fight because the doorbell's ringing, and you run over the doorbell and you put on a big smile. Hi, how's it going? But deep inside, you're still festering this incomplete conversation that's sitting over here in the other room. And then you're sitting there and your friends come by, and for 2 hours they're around. And so you kind of forgot that. You repressed it kind of. And it's sitting in the subconscious. Any active judgment is conscious and unconscious, but anything that's previously that's been repressed goes into the subconscious. And that subconscious is running physiology. And so what I find in the diabetes is that their subconscious bitterness causing the glucose levels to go up for a fight or flight response. And it's just chronic. It just keeps going on. And they haven't addressed it. And very commonly, you'll find that they have. If we find out and ask the right questions, we can actually find out who it is and who it's related to. And it can be themselves, judging part of themselves to another part of themselves. But it's 90% of the time it goes to somebody in the family. And very commonly, the father figure. I found that process. And so there's a defense going on. And so we have, in the breakthrough experience, what we do, or one-on-ones, what we do is we have to identify all of those mechanisms, and we do the DeMartini method on it, and we step-by-step methodically clear each one. And as we do, we've had people that astonishingly have had taken insulin for years, all of a sudden coming down off the insulin, in some cases completely coming off it, which is unheard of. And it's like, what? I've had even the medical professionals say, well, you can't do that. You can't do it. And the beta cells are gone and they're not functioning. And the receptor sites and the diabetes 2, they're hypersensitive. Why? We don't ask why. There's a zebra in the bathtub and you're measuring the stripe length. You're measuring the amount of dung. You're measuring the length. You're measuring the width. You're measuring everything about the zebra. But you didn't ask, why is the zebra there? Why is he there in the bathtub? And that's what's going on. And diabetes, I've seen that repeatedly go on. And the hypoglycemics are just the opposite persona. These are personalities that are involved in this. And if we change that, we clear that, the diabetes changes. And with their receptivity. Now, exercise also helps that. Proper food will do that. Although getting a diabetic, typically getting them to eat a certain way, they have their own way of doing it. They want to be told. When you talk to them, you have to communicate where they feel it's their decision. But if you work with that and balance that, you can change the chemistry. And I've seen it too many times to ignore. So I'm going to stand up on that one because I've seen it too many times. We've helped it. Now, what's the next condition?
The next one is eczema.
Well, eczema is very commonly when we are scattered and subordinating ourselves to a lot of people and trying to multitask and try to do a bunch of things that aren't really highest on our value and scattering ourselves. We can, in a sense, have a low-grade chronic sympathetic response, and that can attack. The histamine levels can attack the cells and release exudates and materials, and we can get an eczema. Some psoriasis and eczema, they can come out similar in that respect. But we can have these type of conditions show up because of a chronic scattered stress response. So what I do with those situations is we try to find out, I've just developed a new method for this one now. I try to find out exactly who we're subordinating to. And then I basically find out what it is about them that you think they have that's more authoritative than you. Is it more intelligent, more success, more achievements or something? And find out where in you. In the breakthrough experience, I ask, whatever you see in other people, where do you have it? Because any trait you disown on the outside is creating an illness on the inside. You got to own things. You got to be able to embrace all things inside yourself. You don't need to get rid of any part of yourself to love yourself. So in that condition, I go in and I have them identify who they're subordinating to, who they're trying to please at the expense of their own highest values. And one by one, we go in there and we neutralize the infatuation of those people and the giving them power over them and get them back into priority. And the second to get back into priorities and say no to other things and get into things, their physiology calms down. Their stress levels drop. Their eustress goes up, but their distress goes down. And the body normally takes care of itself. We also give them supplementation and vitamins B and vitamins A. And we make sure that they're eating decent foods and make sure they're getting proper fatty acids and things of this nature. But that's psychologically, that's where I go. And it's not that hard to transform that. There's a gentleman who is from Florida who had had this eczema on scalp, elbows. It was on almost all the major joint, overlapping the joints since childhood. He could remember as far back as he could remember. And he was now 42 years old. And he had a major, major, major trying to please his father figure. And the family on the father's side had high expectations for being a health professional. And the constant in his perception. Now, this it didn't turn out to be true when we went through the breakthrough experience. We found out that he had support and challenge. But his perception was that he was constantly never good enough, constantly trying to do it, and always trying to push himself and drive himself to do something. And we cleared that in Dallas, Texas, when he came to the breakthrough experience in the breakthrough. And that was the end of his psoriasis. And that was 20-something years ago, about 22 years ago. Psoriasis hasn't been back since. And that happened in one cathartic experience of realization and relinquishing of his charge and expectations on himself based on his perceptions of his family and dad particularly. So I've seen that many cases. So we subordinate. We inject the values of others. We try to be somebody we're not. We stress ourselves out, banging our head against the wall. We judge ourselves. We attack ourselves with histamine. Our immune system gets run down because of all the stress we have. And we create the illness as a feedback. And it's convoluted because we don't know how to ask the right questions. We just take a medication. We never actually go and look inside and uncover that. That's been my fascination all these years.
This question is from Brian. I've been on antibiotics for the past year to treat adult acne and rosacea. I'm not sure if I pronounced that correctly. I'm worried about coming off the antibiotics in case my acne and rosacea. However, I'm also worried about the dangers of staying on the antibiotics too long. What should I do?
That's a great question. Some of the answers that I may give you may not be what people want to hear. But my job is not to please people all the time. My job is to deliver what I find to be more accurate. So just know that what I find, if you have a significant degree of acne, the first thing I do is I look at your diet. And I make sure that you're not eating sweets like soft drinks, any artificial sweeteners, sweetenings, any sugary content. I just say that's ridiculous. Knock it out. And get into natural foods, natural fruits, natural vegetables, you know, fish, fowl, more of a Mediterranean style diet. Because I've seen a lot of people, particularly teens, that are just drinking just crap, excuse the expression. It's not even food substance. And they are having acne results from that, just that alone, as a response in the body for some of the materials that are sitting in these drinks. Now, that may not be the case, but if it is, my advice is let's get your diet back in order. The second thing is I find in acne, if it's a boiling type of acne, which you would be on a medication, yes, you may find the bacteria there, but I don't find that to be the cause. I find it's a self-depreciation. Depression is a comparison of your current reality to a fantasy, an unrealistic expectation that we have about ourselves. And anytime we are trying to live, trying to please other people, trying to set up an expectation that we can't live by, and we're beating ourselves up, that boiling up inside, you might say, literally breaks us out in acne. So you might want to make a list of the things that you're doing, the things that you feel that you're beating yourself up about. Now, I know this is going to sound like a commercial, but the real truth is it's the best thing I can advise you. Find somebody, come into our office, either come to the Breakthrough Experience and learn how to do the method on yourself, or contact the office and let's find somebody who's a facilitator of mine, because I got hundreds of facilitators around the world that can assist you in clearing out any judgments you have on yourself, and also check on the diet. Because it's not that hard to dissolve. Once you clear out the baggage, emotional baggage that's inducing it, then you will consider testing a weaning process with your doctor on the attempt to wean off the antibiotics. But not until I would not even consider taking off the antibiotics until I actually made sure that I cleared the stuff that I know is sitting there, the stuff that you're self-depreciating on. But if you're beating yourself up and you're feeling shamed about something, or feeling not good enough, or feel like you're not living up to it, and you have unbelievable expectations that you're not living by, either from injected values of authorities or from you just self, you set up fantasies that aren't real. That self-depreciation will boil out into acne. And so I go in there and I find out what they are. It's a series of questions I ask, and I go in there and find out what they are. I do it in the Breakthrough Experience for people with acne. And I go in there and find out what are you judging? And is something self-depreciating? And anytime you expect yourself to live either one-sided, happy without sad, positive without negative, pleasure without pain, or anytime you expect yourself to live outside your values and somebody else's values, acne will come up as a feedback system to let you know that. So I go in there and I find that out. I don't take you off the medication, the antibiotics, until we've cleared some of those. Then we work with the doctor and said, we've been clearing on psychology. We've been changing diet. We'd like to see if there's any possible way we could now wean it 10% at a time. And then if we go for a period of time, 10%, there's no repercussions. We didn't do another 10%. We just wean it off until you then freed back onto your life again. And believe it or not, it's not that difficult to do. Too many people have had that resolved. But if we're eating crazy foods that aren't really healthy for us, and we're self-depreciating, acne is a feedback system to us.
Thank you, John.
And our hormones are out of balance. Our testosterone goes out of balance, and we have our effects from that.
Fantastic. We got our next question here from Keith. What is the best way to affect so-called chronic pain, pain that has been created and recreated for years by the belief that the pain is able to be chronic?
Well, there is a thing called acute and chronic pain. Acute pain usually has a direct correlation to something that is damaging cells, irritating nerves. It's neurological in origin. It is acute and short-lived. And when you bruise yourself, when you rip something, you pull something, you sharp objects affect you, those things cause acute pain. Chronic pain is different. Chronic pain, when they can't find any logical reasons that are keep stimulating it, that is usually what they call glial pain. It's not neurological pain, it's glial pain. There's a different transmitters involved. And the glial pain is involved with attentions and intentions, therefore is value-driven. And we usually find a unconscious motive driving the reason to do it. Now, I had a lovely lady who is in the Marion Hotel in Dublin, Ireland, who I consulted with, who had had pain claimed since young childhood. And we found out, I asked her a simple question. So what's the benefit you're getting out of the pain? And she's, well, I'm not getting benefit out of it. I said, I understand that, but no one will continue to do something unless they get more advantage and disadvantages out of it. So what's the pain advantages? And she looked at me like puzzled, and how dare you ask that? And I said, let's look, what's the benefit you're getting out of the pain? And she couldn't come up with any for a few. And I thought, could it be this? Could it be this? Could it be this? Finally, she said, well, yes. Then she found out that when she was young, her sister was very bright, very good in sports, and very attractive. She, on the other hand, was like the antiparticle, which is very common in family dynamics. She was not the brightest. She was not the most attractive, and she was not into sports. So her sister got all the attention and got all the accolades, and there's no way she could compete with her. So children will find alternative ways to get competition to get affection from the parents and from society. And in her case was she'd get injured, she'd get sick, she'd get in pain, and then the parents would go away from the other girl and have to give her attention. And so she developed a strategy. And this is why if a child has a boo-boo out on the street, scrapes its elbow or whatever, and comes running home and doesn't cry for two blocks, then comes and sees mommy there and starts to cry all of a sudden, if you sit there and give it attention and hug it and go and give it ice cream, which is foolish, or go and, you know, oh, you have a boo-boo, let's go to the movies, and you just reward pain responses, instead of asking, so what did you do? How did you initiate this? What will you do next time different? And help them learn through it. They can grow up the idea using pain as a strategy to get what they want in life. I see it every week in the breakthrough experience. I watch people do that. They play victims instead of victors, and they become victims of their history instead of masters of their destiny. So I'm not saying that this case is, but I'm just saying that it's wise to go and look for unconscious motives. So what you do is you ask yourself, what are the benefits you're getting out of it? Are you getting closer to your family? Are you getting to go and do a different career that you want to do? Are you getting out of having to go to work in a way that you don't and you're not inspired by? Is it allowing you time to think? Is it giving you time to watch a movie? Is it because you're not engaged in what you're doing in your life? I always say that if you're not filling your day with high priority actions that inspire you and being engaged in life, you're going to the amygdala and create a desire for a one-sided world and then get smacked by the other side. And I say that addictive behavior is a compensation for unfulfilled and unmeaningful value systems. So the people that are using pain in order to get that, which is glial pain, has an unconscious motive. So asking what is the benefit you're getting at it and keep going until you get a tear in the eye, you'd be surprised. And I tell people to write down 150 benefits of what they're getting out of the pain. And as they are trying to do that, which is not an easy project, as they do that, there'll be some that'll bring tears to the eyes and go, oh my God, no wonder I'm doing this. And this lady, when I asked her, what are the benefits you're getting out of that? She had unbelievable amount of tears. She says, do you think I could actually be doing this all these years in order to gain attention? And then it becomes a habit and my persona and the way I live my life. I said, what do you think? And she looked at me with tears in her eyes. She said, I think that's it. And I said, you've been sitting there. You've tried medications. You've tried this. You've tried all these things, but you never asked yourself that question. Anyway, that transforms her pain, that realization.
That's incredible. We've got another question here. I'm in my 40s and starting to suffer quite often from erectile dysfunction. My doctor and wife wants me to take medication. What should I, but I would like to avoid if possible. What should I do, Dr. DeMartini?
Well, that's a great question. I the first thing I would do is, this is not going to be kosher to some people, but I'm going to say it anyway. The first thing I would do is to find out if there's built up emotional charges between him and his wife, because the organs of sexuality aren't actually the penis and the vagina, as some people think. Those are kind of a secondary expressors. The brain is the real organ of sexuality, and our perceptions. I mean, everybody here can have a situation where they see something walk by that's a turn on. And all of a sudden, the blood supply goes out of the cortex into the other organs. And then other times you can have that same person turn around and do something that challenges your values. And all of a sudden, sex drive goes down again. So sex, I've seen people have a sexual turn on and then discover something about the person. In the second they discover it, it goes away. I've also seen people. I had a lady that alive in a seminar who said, Dr. DeMartini, I'm trying to find my soulmate. I just want to find a soulmate. And I said, oh, what about this guy over here? And she looked at him and goes, oh God, that's not my style at all. And I said, well, do you know who this person is? And she goes, no, should I know him? And I said, well, you don't know who he is. He's one of the most famous people in the world. He's the wealthiest billionaire, one of the wealthiest billionaires in the world. And I concocted a story about how great this person was and all the things he's done. And she came up afterwards and she said, well, can I get his contact details? And she was turned on by it. And I showed her that that was all about perception. So her perception is what's creating this scenario. So what I do is I have people go through when they have that situation, is I have them go through and do the DeMartini method, on the partner and clear every single thing all the way back as far as they've been with that person that they could think of that could be unconsciously or subconsciously triggering a reaction to shut down the reproductive cycle. Because I assure you that this happens. This is common. And so what happens is clear it. Going to do the DMRT method, clear it in the breakthrough. So you do your mate in the program. I show you exactly what to do. You start clearing out all those little stored up little things that shut it down. And then we can also be intimidated if all of a sudden, because what shuts it down is somehow a stress response. So if somehow the woman has a higher drive, a higher libido than you, that'll shut it down because you feel like you're under performance. You have to prove yourself to them. That'll shut it down. If there's any emotional charges there that you think is interfering with the support of your highest values, it'll shut it down. So we go and we find out what those are and we clear them. And it's amazing what happens just from that alone. And then we find out if all of a sudden you still can get turned on either in normal functioning by yourself or by somebody else, if you can get turned on and to keep an erection for a period of time, then you obviously it's not your physiology. And probably you've checked your physiology with health specialists and that's not probably what it is. But what's going on is probably the accumulation of subconsciously subtle challenges that you're not even aware of that are sitting there that are being triggered by the behavioral dynamic of the sex response. I would love to have that individual, whoever sent that in, to actually sit down and work with them and clear that out and take the time to go through methodically and everything else and see what happens. Because I've done it many, many times. And all of a sudden they go, now I'm performing. I said, well, that's because of your response, your psychological response, your perceptions. Let's clear them. Because there's probably nothing wrong with you. There's probably nothing wrong with your wife. But there's probably something that's imbalanced in the perceptions between the two.
Fantastic. And for the audience member, Mark, welcome to come and join us.
One more thing. You also want to make sure that if you're overweight and your estrogen levels are too high because of that, you also want to bring your weight down because that also can induce it. But that's usually a defense mechanism to those things I was talking about, those subtle challenges. You're putting on weight to protect yourself. So pardon me for throwing that one into.
John, we've got another question here from Mark. What is the cause of extreme exhaustion in the afternoon?
Well, the first thing I do when I have people that have quite a bit of exhaustion in the afternoon is I first find out if they were fine during the morning. I first look at what they eat at lunch because the blood sugar can go up and they can go crashing. So if they overeat, overeating is like trying to fight to gain peace kind of thing. Overeating is not how you gain energy. Moderate to light eating actually gives you more energy. It's overeating that tend to do it. So I'd look at what they're eating. I would look at if it's within an hour, 2 hours, or 3 hours, because different materials are metabolized at different rates. I'd look at how quick the fall occurs. Because if the blood sugar drops and they're irritable and they're really fatigued and they need one to go to sleep, it's very possible that they've eaten things that they're reacting to and overate. Also, I want to look at if they're fine during the day and they love what they're doing and they're inspired in the morning and they just hit that afternoon dip, it's probably blood sugar. And I would just look at what they're doing on their diet and look at what they're doing. Or with a history, if I had the person here, I could ask the history. It could be that in the morning they do one thing, in the afternoon they're doing something that's not inspiring to them. Because usually if you're doing something that you can't wait to do and you're really inspired by it, that normalizes blood sugar pretty quickly. But if you're doing something you're not inspired by and you've overeaten because you're not engaged in your work, I would go through an exercise. First, I would moderate the diet and figure out what's going on with the diet. The second thing, I would go in there and link whatever you're doing in the afternoon to your highest values. I explained that in the breakthrough experience. You take because whenever you're not inspired by your work and you're drained on energy, it's because you're not seeing how what you're doing is the most meaningful thing you can be doing. Because if you're doing something really inspiring, you don't have it. People say, how do you go 14, 16 hours a day, 18 hours a day, every day, energized from morning to evening? And I have the energy level. And they go, how do you do that? And they said, because whatever I'm doing is linked to my highest value. And I'm inspired to do that. So I don't have this, periods. So unless I was to go and overeat, which I don't do. I always say that a lot of the behavior that we do, if you're really, really, really engaged in something you're doing, you eat to live. You don't live to eat. But if you're not engaged, you may be overeating and trying to get fats, carbohydrates, and things that stimulate, particularly sugar, to compensate for it because you're unfulfilled and you want your high to compensate for the low that you're feeling. If you eat that way, we need to stop, regulate what's going on in the food, and we need to get you engaged by finding out how what you're doing is linked to highest values. And all of a sudden, you will eat wiser, you will value yourself, because when you know you have something extremely meaningful to do, you eat wisely to make sure you perform at your peak. And so I would look at what – I'd get the history of what you're eating. I'd get the history of – I'd be asking questions, how do you perceive your job, and make sure that that is engaged. And I have a system for that, a value structure, value application structure that I train people in corporations and people on how to do that. And in the breakthrough experience, I show you how to do that. So another reason for the breakthrough experience, but also another understanding of how your physiology is giving you feedback.
Fantastic. We've got a question from Sajida. Thank you, Sajida. Hi, Dr. DeMartini. Please, can you discuss depression that keeps on reoccurring and is really holding me back in my life?
Well, I'm gonna confront that because I think depression is a comparison of our current reality to an unrealistic expectation, fantasy, or delusion we keep holding on to. So when I ask people what are they depressed about, somewhere online, whoever just asked that question, please contact our office, go online and go look and watch the video I have on depression. That's one, because it's going to give you more than what I can say in just a couple of minutes here. If you're having depression, come to the Breakthrough Experience, because I'm absolutely certain. I mean, we had too many, I mean, hundreds of people have been so-called depressed, and we showed them exactly what they're doing and why they're creating that outcome. And they clear that. It's not that difficult to clear. I'm amazed at how our society, it just assumes biochemical imbalance, it's a disease. I don't believe that. I just think that's crap. I'm sorry, but I just think that's absolute crap, and it's actually misleading people all over the world. Depression is a comparison of your current reality to a fantasy that you are unconsciously running your life by. You're expecting something to occur that's not ever going to occur because you're expecting yourself to live outside your highest values. You're expecting a one-sided world, not a two-sided world. We're expecting somebody else to live outside their values or to be one-sided. And then I guarantee in a matter of minutes, we could identify what that is. We could show you what to do. It's not that difficult. And I know that I get attacked by pharmaceutical promoters and people that want to say, no, I'm on a drug and I need that drug and everything else. And they're addicts. I think that that's just crazy. Because I've had people in the program that say, well, I've been on medication for 11 years and I'm depressed and this and that. And I start going in there and we uncover what those things are. And I explain 15 most common ones in the program, in the Breakthrough Experience, 15 most common reasons why people are depressed. And they just go tick, 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 tick. God, no wonder I'm there. And I say that depression isn't your enemy. It's your friend. It's trying to get you to break your addictions to fantasies about how life's supposed to be. And so I know this may be not what you want to hear, but I'm absolutely certain the Breakthrough can help that. And it's work in some cases. It's not always just one. You might have a whole bunch of fantasies stacked up. I had a lady that came from the Ukraine that was down in South Africa who was attending the Breakthrough Experience. And she says, I met this man. He was my soulmate. She was infatuated. She was blind to the downsides. She left her country, came all the way down to South Africa. She thought, oh, my God, I'm going to be now finally in the life of my dreams. And she was a painter. And she thought, oh, I'll do that. And he wanted a family. And she got pregnant. She stopped doing her paintings. He was supposed to be paying for this. He eventually said, you need to take care of the kids. He turned out to be not what she thought. They had a major battle. She stopped her career. She stopped her thing. She became dependent. And she held on to the fantasy that she was going to be this famous painter. And she had this, she realized that she was stuck in these traps. And I went in there and I go, well, okay, if you had not come to there, what would have been the drawback staying in Ukraine? And she goes, well, I would have been happy. And I go, no. What would the drawback? Because anytime you assume there's a pleasure without a pain, a happy without a sad, a positive without a negative, or any one-sided systems, you got a delusion and fantasy. And I got to balance that fantasy and get grounded. Because you can't appreciate your life if you're comparing it to a fantasy. If you have a spouse and you're comparing them to a Chippendale or a Victoria's Secret model, you're thinking they should be that way. If they're not that way, there's something wrong. You're going to not appreciate what you got. And if you don't appreciate what you got, you're not going to get more to be appreciative of. So what I do is I go in there and we itemize exactly what those unrealistic expectations are. We uncover them, and then we use the DeMartini method to clear them. And all of a sudden, your chemistry changes. And all of a sudden, you go, oh, I'm not depressed now. And I didn't take any medication. So pardon me for just being blunt about it, but I see it every week.
Thank you, Sajida. And please send us a message at the DeMartini Institute, drdemartini.com. Download and watch that video on depression. I've seen it myself. It's a fantastic video. The next question is from Nutan. Can you attend the breakthrough experience if you have any health problems? So Nutan has obviously got health problems at the moment, and he's concerned about attending the breakthrough experience with those conditions.
Well, it depends on what the conditions are. If he has, I mean, I had a gentleman who had so-called chronic fatigue Epstein-Barr condition, and they wheeled him in Calgary, Canada. They wheeled him in the back of the room in a hospital bed with an IV. Now, that's a quite crazy one. His wife came up to me and said, I'm afraid he may not be able to stay awake. I hope he's not offending you in any way. I says, I gotta offend me. And he says, if he can stay asleep through my program, I don't see that, but let's see what he does. Well, the guy stayed awake till 2 a.m. and he couldn't believe what he learned. And the following day, he did not come in that bed. We broke through some major stuff in his chronic fatigue syndrome. What we found is that he was in a career and he was a very high position CEO of a company. And all of a sudden, the stock market went down in his industry and they got rid of him, not because really he did anything. It's just the industry cycle went on and they had to have the shareholders had to get rid of somebody to blame somebody instead of just realizing it's a cycle. And so they got rid of him and he was like distraught because it was his life's dream to be in running that company. And all of a sudden he had no control over it and he was depressed and he was comparing his current reality to that fantasy. Now, when he went to the medical doctor that he went to, they found Epstein-Barr virus. And so they said, well, that's the cause. And I was amazed. Well, today he's back in another company. He's running a new company on his own because I turned that into on the way, not in the way. I turned that situation that he thought he was so terrible that he was holding on to a fantasy about his life and he felt his life was ending and he was depressed and down and fatigued. I turned it into an opportunity. Let's go out and start another company. You know how to run a company. Let's create one. And he did. And he's not in Epstein-Barr condition. He's not chronic fatigue, et cetera. So that's a condition. So if a person has most conditions, unless they're acute, something like, maybe a smallpox or you know, something that's, would be so infectious disease of some form, I don't see any reason why you can't come. You would have to sit through the program. You'd have to stay awake. But I've rarely ever seen anybody fall asleep in the breakthrough experience. They're wide awake and going. They're learning too much. There's too much change in their life. But what you do is you come there. If you have any questions, contact us. We'll give you feedback. And if they have a question in my office, they'll contact me and I'll say, no, it shouldn't be a problem. I don't know if too many problems have come in there. I've had people with all kinds of conditions, even under chemotherapy, coming in there with IVs, to help transform their life. So I don't know of any reason other than an acute, infectious, epidemic kind of condition. Other than that, I don't know. Don't say anything that would be a reason, no.
Fantastic. So John, we'll see you there and we expect you there. The next question is from Daniel. Do you have a product where the DeMartini method is presented in details?
That's great. I wish I'd give you the exact date. I think it's coming out, I'm a guess, in September, October. If you contacted the South African office, you could get that estimated date when we're launching it. We are putting out a video on the method itself, the questions, exactly the method, etc. We have an audio cassette that you can also get. I think it's free online. I did a live presentation. It was about an hour and a half long on the method and how I developed the method. And it's called Leaving Your Baggage Behind. So that one might be, I'm not sure, but it should be somehow on my website accessible. But if not, contact the office and go on where it says help on the little far right side, hit help. And one of my people will be able to type in what to do and how to get a hold of it. That's the first start. When the new product comes out, get the video because I'm going through each column, each question, explaining why and what I'm doing with it, etc. And very powerful. I'm absolutely certain the quality of your life, especially the quality of the questions you ask, it makes a difference to know the right questions. And once you have them, they got them for life. So the method is something once you learn how to do it, you'll use it over again from anytime you're under stress situations, it'll be used. I've been teaching that for over 3 decades now, and it's useful. The grief process and the breakthrough experience is so mind-blowing. It's hard for them to comprehend it. We take people that have been in grief over deaths and things like that, and we dissolve it. And I've been doing that since 1986. And nobody believes it was possible. It's possible. I do it. I guarantee it. I mean, I get money back guarantee on that one. I've not failed once since 1986. And we do it each week in the Breakthrough Experience. So that is a very powerful tool. And that's because the right questions and the right paradigm. And I've been studying the brain and psychology and this area and physiology all these years, 45 years almost. And there's innovative and creative new information. It's not, you won't be able to see it anywhere else. This is it. And I mean that, you can hold me to it. I ask people at the end of the Breakthrough Experience, how many of you learned something this weekend that you probably would never learn the rest of your life? And they all, every hand goes up and they go, yep. Because they're going to learn something. It's a new paradigm for them. And it's time for a new paradigm. And somebody's got to stand up and give a new paradigm when it comes to physiology and psychology.
Fantastic, John. And thank you very much. I just want to shout out to the audience. We're going to take one last question. We'll see if any more come through. But that offer is still available for the next 2 hours. So please click through. We'd love to see you at the Breakthrough Experience, as you can get a lot of these issues resolved and really practice this method and apply this method. I think that's the real power of it. It's not something that you just learn. It's something you apply and work through. And at the end of the weekend, you actually have your result. And I think that's the profound thing. You're not paying to attend a course. You're paying to resolve the issue that you've been struggling with. That is the breakthrough. And that's why I personally would recommend this to anyone. So the next question we've got here is from Aksana. Beautiful name. I have a question about cholesterol. I'm just 25 years old and I've been extremely high cholesterol levels. I'm not quite sure what it says about my perceptions or where I could start looking. That's from Aksana.
I had a woman who is 72 years old that came in my office many years ago that her physician told her that she was a time bomb and a stroke waiting to happen. And she had hypertension, hyperlipidemia, hypercholesterolemia, and She was a time bomb. And because she had been a patient of mine years earlier for another issue, she came in and asked me if I thought I could help that. And I said, well, let's see. What are you doing right now? I was on medication and I'm trying to do nutritional things. And she's going to a nutritionist that I knew that was excellent. So she was doing all that. I said, here's what I'm going to ask you to do. I'm going to ask you to write down all of the resentments that you can think of, because your lipids, your blood pressure goes up and cause turbulence in the blood vessels that constrict, except in certain areas of the body, when you're under high resentment state. I mean, almost everybody who's been really angry and raged and things, you can feel the blood pressure go up and you can feel the turbulence inside the heart. Sometimes you even have arrhythmias and things. And so what happens is we had to make her list on the things that she was influenced on. We found out that she'd been married three husbands. She's working for a gentleman who is the head of a religious organization, big one, one of the famous ones in America. She's got a homosexual son that she was loving, but also because she came from old school, she wasn't honoring homosexuality day and the reality of that and the normality of that. But she was basically still judging that because she was religiously inclined and they had a charge on homosexuality for some crazy reason. And even though that's where most of it is, in fact, we find. But she was charged on that. She was charged on her boss. She had charge on three husbands and charge on her current boyfriend. So I took her through the DeMartini method on the first husband and did everything I could in the time we had and then told her to go home and start working on the next one and then come back next week. And we're going to finish that one. And we go each week. We'll do that. Yeah, over a 6-week period, we did 7 people, cleared that until there was nothing there except grace, gratitude for all of those. I mean, just cleared all of the major charges on males that she had. There was a big, strong one. She went back to her physician and he was blown away. He was just astonished. He goes, I don't know what you did. I don't know what the heck's going on. I don't see this, but everything's normalized. She also had anemia. That's what gave it away. So I would ask if you have any history of your blood, your CBC, I'd like to see if you've got any RBC alterations, because the red blood cells deal with the oxidation during the day, which deals with testosterone, deals with males. The white blood cells deal with nurturing, protection, and repair. That's the female side. Hyperlipidemia very commonly is the female upset with males. So I'd go through there and clear out all the charges you might have with male sides and just see what happens doing the Demartini method. Because if you've tried all these other things and you're trying to avoid having to do just a medication to try to do it, do that exercise and you just might surprise yourself. But I would need to ask the questions. That's why in the breaks, I either do it or one-on-ones. Usually I do those one-on-ones. I try to go in and pin down what those things are, because in the breaks, sometimes people have very complex systems. And because I may not be able to get down into their system and have the time for that system. So if I can do it and I give them a generic, that's great. But sometimes I need to go specific. And so I need to go ask the right questions to get down to what exactly is the charges that are underlying this. Because you don't just have hyperlipidemia for no reason. There's a reason. We need to find it.
And that brings us to the end of this episode of the Dr. Demartini Show. To determine and discover your values, head over to drdemartini.com, where you will also find blogs, videos, research materials, online courses, and exactly how you can sign up to become part of the breakthrough experience in your local city.